Every day at this time, we talk Stanley Cup playoffs with you. We want to keep you in the loop. I know you may be sad, you may be mad, you may be disappointed. Whatever your emotions are about the Predators being out, we're going to keep you in the loop. We hope you'll keep checking in all the way until the end. We certainly have been on this show, and boy, were things crazy last night in St. Louis. What a crazy ending as the Sharks take Game 3 of that series. And to help us with that and a lot more, Barry Melrose from ESPN is on the line with us. Barry, how you doing?
Doing great. How are you guys?
Oh, we're doing fantastic. Other than the Predators being out, we're doing fantastic, and we're still engaged in the Stanley Cup playoffs watching this. And, man, you kind of felt bad for the Blues last night because I think most people feel like they got hosed. What do you think?
Yeah, they got hosed. I think that when you're watching that game, obviously when it went into overtime, it was definitely a hand pass. I think anyone who watched the game that knows anything about hockey realizes that. San Jose is a lucky team right now because if you look at their history, they had that situation with Vegas where the Pavelski injury opened up a five-minute major. They scored four goals on that and ended up winning that series. Against Colorado, they had the play that was offside that was deemed no goal. That was a tying goal, and San Jose ended up winning that round. And now they ended up winning a game because of that pan pass ruling. So things are going San Jose's way right now as far as the rule book's concerned.
Yeah, we said we had a fun with that earlier in the show, Barry. We said the best tweet we saw last night on Twitter was somebody tweeted out, man, if San Jose could just catch a break in the playoffs.
Yeah, it seems like everything's going their way. There's no doubt about that. They're two wins away from Stanley Cup Finals, and everything, all these big rules are going their way. It usually doesn't happen that way. It usually evens out, but right now you got to think that they're sort of ordained right now, the San Jose Sharks. Everything's going their way.
Yeah, no doubt about it. So what is the right balance? You've been around the game for a long, long time. I don't know what side of the fence you're on. There's some people who are like, review everything, get it right. And some people are like, whoa, whoa, you know, this game's going to get longer. Where are you? What's the right balance in your mind?
Well, it's a slippery slope because you get to the point where everything is called and you don't even need referees anymore. You'll just have robots watching the game. And when a call happens, the robots up the stairs will decide the ruling. But I'm of the ilk that I want the right call made. I can live with a ruling. I can live with going upstairs or going to Toronto. We've got a good system. It happens fast for the most part. So if it takes five extra minutes to end the game to get the right call, I have no problem with that. And I think most people don't have a problem with that. So I think that if you have that ruling that the right call is always made, I think everyone can live with that and should live with that. So but it is something the NHL will look at, I'm sure, because of all the stuff that's happened in the playoffs. And hopefully they'll come up with a ruling that makes sure that the right call is always made. And the goal is a goal is a goal type deal. And like I said last night, I think everybody can live with that as long as the right call is made at the end of the day.
Yeah, how about this for a suggestion? See what you think about this. I'll toss this your way. What about if we, you know, look, something's probably going to happen. I mean, they got a lot of attention last night. I don't think it was the attention the league was looking for. So they'll probably have to make a change in the offseason. But what if some of these changes or a big change like this were to just be implemented in the playoffs? Not that the regular season is important, because it is. But what if these things just played out, because we do change the overtime rules in the playoffs? What about if there was a playoff or a review rule change, but it was only going to be implemented in the playoffs? How would you feel about that?
Well, what happens then during the regular season? A team gets a bad call against them, just like last night, and that determines if you make the playoffs or not. So I don't think that's fair either. I think if they're going to change the rule, change it during the regular season. That way, when we get to the playoffs, the rule has been hashed out. All the gray areas have been taken care of, and you know, the system is a lot better by then. So that's what I would think should happen. Start it at the start of the season. Come up with the ruling that the governors and the owners can live with, and start it during the regular season. And by the time we get to the playoffs, the rule has been implemented. Everyone knows the rule, how it works, and things should happen a lot faster that way if we've had a year to work on it and take all the kinks out of it by then. So But again, as long as the right call's made, I can live with pretty well anything the NHL decides.
It's been evolving for a while. Barry Melrose is with us from ESPN, NHL analyst. And Barry, just thinking back to when you were behind the bench, I can only imagine how many times you may have walked back into an office frustrated that, you know, when you went back and looked at a play that the referees didn't get it right. I guess we've had to deal with this for all of these years. Is there any play that comes to mind for you in a big game where you wish there was more replay?
I was coaching Los Angeles. We lost the Stanley Cup because of a curve in a stick. So I've been there. I've walked into a dressing room where you feel you've got the shaft and you've got to get your team ready to play the next day. So I've certainly been there. And again, if there's a rule and you can look at the rule by video replay that shows whether it's a goal, whether it's not a goal, whether it's offside, whether it's not offside, I can certainly live with that. But it's hard. Right now, Coach Berube's got a tough job ahead of him. He's got to get his team ready to play within 48 hours, and he's got to use what happened to them as motivation to make sure that they win the next game. And if they win the next game, and really the Blues players after the game handled it very well. You could tell they're very frustrated, very angry, but they all said to a man, we just have to win the next game, and then we got a best of three. So St. Louis Blues have handled it very well, and you got to cheer for a team like that handled that situation so well, and maybe get on St. Louis's side, start getting the karma level up for St. Louis Blues, and maybe they'll get a break in the next game that'll determine if they win or not.
The unfortunate thing is, from just the entertainment standpoint, it was a heck of a hockey game. Went back and forth, a lot of drama, the lead changes, all the kind of stuff that you really like. And the Blues had to be pretty disappointed that they had the lead, and they had done such a good job on Logan Couture, who's had such a phenomenal postseason, and then boom, the one time he gets loose, he's able to tie it late with the goalie pulled.
Well, overtime's like that. That's what makes overtime so special and why I hope the NHL never gets rid of sudden death overtime in the playoffs. I think it's something that no other sport has. It's such a finite moment. You got two teams battling hard. It's a great game. Both teams have had chances to win in overtime. We got the late goal by San Jose to tie the game up. San Jose blew a two-goal lead and ended up being down by a goal. And then, all of a sudden, with sudden death overtime, the rule happens and the game is over. I love sudden death overtime. I think it's great, and I never want to lose that. But I also want to make sure that we don't have that situation like the Pavelski situation against in the previous round. And also, last night, if you remember, there was a puck that went into the crowd. It was definitely a shot in, and it should have been a penalty, and all four referees missed that also. So it was quite a night as far as the rules were concerned. The game was great, but the major story is the four referees are the major story, and no referees want to be a story as far as the game is concerned, and yet these four are.
Well said. Barry, before we let you go, a thought on the East. Boston looks like they got a stranglehold on the series, of course, against the Hurricanes, but they're playing at such a high level. If they keep playing the way they are they the best team left in your mind?
Yeah, you'd have to say so. They're going to get home ice through the whole playoffs. They're playing great hockey. Their special teams are the best. San Jose's power play is struggling. St. Louis's power play is struggling. Carolina's power play is struggling. Yet Boston's power play is just humming along at over 20%. So. They're very good defensively. Tuukka Rask is the best goaltender left. He's playing great. Really, I would think it's between him and Couture who's going to win the Conn Smythe. Both those guys have been the best players in the playoffs. But Boston is good at everything. They're good defensively. They're good offensively. They've got four lines that score. They've got 19 guys on the Boston Bruins that have scored a goal this year in the playoffs. That's a phenomenal number. You only got 18 guys on the ice at one time. And yet they've got 19 guys that have scored a goal for the Boston Bruins. So who do you shut down? Every other team, you got to shut down Couture. You got to shut down Schwartz. But the Boston Bruins, you want to shut down Marchand. You want to shut down Bergeron. But then the Corrali line plays great and gets a goal. So they are the best team right now in the playoffs. I don't think there's any doubt about that.
I think what's fun about the Stanley Cup playoffs, Barry, and you lived it, but it's just so incredibly hard. When you always have heard, hey, you just got to get in and anything can happen, that truly is the case in hockey. Just get in and you never know what can happen.
Well, Tim Legler and I sit in the same room when we watch our games. He's got his TVs on basketball. I got my TVs on hockey. And at the start of the year, I said, Tim, who's going to be the four teams that will be playing for the championship of the NBA? And he basically gave me the four teams that are in it. And that is not the situation with the NHL.
No.
We have parity. Any team can beat anybody. It's getting hot at the right time. It's getting a hot goaltender at the right time. And you're right. You know, to win four rounds, best of sevens, is just a phenomenal, hard thing to do. And it tests you mentally. It tests you physically. And it's a battle of attrition. And that is a big part of it also. Which team has the guts to do it every night, every second night for 2 months? That's how hard it is to win the Stanley Cup.
Yeah. If somebody said they had the Bruins versus the Hurricanes and the Sharks versus the Blues before the playoffs began, I want to see it with a picture of the date and when they pick those picks, because that would be phenomenal if you actually pick that.
Yeah, you're exactly right. I think most people's brackets at the start of the year are kaput right now.
In the trash.
And broken right now. So I think that's what you love about hockey, is that, you know, going into the playoffs, it could be any one of the 16 teams in there could win it. And we've seen that with Carolina. We've seen it with St. Louis. Both these teams were terrible during the early part of the season. Both these teams looked like they had no shot of making the playoffs, much less getting into the third round. And here we are talking about those four teams left. They all have a chance to win.
No doubt about it. Hey, appreciate the visit as always. Thanks for doing this.
My pleasure. You guys take care.
All right, you do the same. Barry Melrose with ESPN also does some work on NHL Network, and we do appreciate him joining us. Tim Corbin at the bottom of the hour. More of Darren and Donick next. Brooks Koepka fired a course record 63 today. How about that? He, of course, is atop your leaderboard for the PGA Championship up in Bethpage Black, up in New York. Today is the first day of the PGA Championship, the 101st PGA Championship. Tommy Fleetwood is currently in second at -3. He's done for the day, so he fires a 67. Lorenzo Vera, 2-under, done for the day with a 68. Luke List, who was up there for a while, did not finish strong, finished -2, 68 as well. He was right there behind Koepka. I think at one point was -4. And let's see, Ricky Fowler is -1. All these golfers are done for the day. Tiger Woods still scrolling. This is not good for him. Justin Rose is even, done for the day. Ooh, wow. Where is Tiger? Jordan Spieth is out there early on. Oh, I guess Tiger may be just out there.
Just starting?
Yeah. Maybe that's why. Yeah, that makes sense. Okay, yeah. He's just starting. He's just a couple holes in. So you just heard from Barry Melrose. He didn't like the idea of changing things for just the playoffs, and I understand that. That makes sense because you're right. Somebody will raise their hand and be like, that game where you didn't review that cost us the playoffs. We missed the playoffs by a point, and that cost us. Or the row, you know. That cost us a playoff. So I get that. But they are going to have to make a change. And it does look like San Jose is the team of destiny because they keep getting all the breaks, and sometimes you need the breaks. That's what it takes. Some people say, well, yeah, they've been the wrong breaks because they shouldn't have happened, and okay, I get that. But it does seem like they are on a collision course to face the Bruins in the Stanley Cup final. That's what it seems like.
Well, it's only 2-1.
How will the Blues recover from this?
It's going seven.
You think it's going seven?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
The Blues are everybody's good. I picked them before the series. I get to give San Jose credit. Their weapons come through at the right time. I keep coming back to this as to what to do about this. What is the right balance of having replay for everything and not having enough measures to keep something like that from happening? I think I'm in favor of keeping it under the umbrella of the coach's challenge and incentivizing coaches to hang on to that challenge and only use it when you really, really need to erase a really bad call. And so that's how I would approach it. I would have a challenge. And this would, you'd have to discuss this. Do you want to add a second challenge to each team? Or just Same thing. You get one challenge, and that's it. Right now, you get one goaltender challenge. You can challenge offside as long as you're willing to take the penalty for not. There has to be a penalty for missing a challenge. Do you agree? You don't need too many challenges. If you had five challenges a night, that would take its toll.
Certainly,
on time
if nothing
of game.
Is at stake, yes.
Right? I mean, we've seen teams take, you know, if it's the third period and you've played three quarters of the game or 80% of the game, if there's anything that's close to goaltender interference, they might just take a flyer and say, let's throw our challenge out there. We lose our timeout, big deal. So I like the offside one where if you're not sure, you're not challenging because nobody wants to have the double whammy. You give up the goal and you go on the penalty kill. And if you notice, when people are challenging offside, you go, uh-oh, they saw something because they have to be sure.
Right.
They don't want to have the penalty kill. I can't remember the last time I was watching a game and they were wrong on the offside challenge. Do you?
Doesn't feel like they miss very often because of what's at stake.
They have a great understanding of what it is and what is and what is not offside.
Mm-hmm.
So that's worked pretty well.
Well, and if they're not for sure 100%, they're like, I'm not willing to risk it.
Right.
Even though I think there's a chance we could win it, but I don't want to risk it because
exactly.
of what's at stake, the penalty.
The frustrating thing is sometimes the guy that's offside just has nothing to do with why the goal was scored, and it's a skate blade barely up in the air, and you're thinking, really, is this worth it? But I do think it works because you don't have a senseless challenge that just delays the game. So what is the right thing? Do you have a challenge for things like this? A hand pass, lifting the puck over the glass would be another one. That's happened a couple of times in the playoffs where the refs just don't see it. It's an easy one to miss. And how far would you take it? Would you take it to a high stick? Let's say, Darren, you fake getting hit in the face with a high stick. Or you get high stick, but after the replay, you see that it's your own teammate that hit you with the stick and not the opposition. I was at a game in Montreal a couple years ago that the Predators were involved in. When, and of all people, he wasn't there very long, but Olli Jokinen, playing for the Predators.
Wow.
the whistle blows, high sticking on Montreal. Okay? They have a giant Jumbotron in Montreal, and they've got a passionate crowd. The replay goes up on the board, and it's pretty clear that Olli did not get high sticked. Okay? I can't remember if it was his own teammate or something else hit him, but it wasn't a stick. The fans go crazy. The guy's in the box. But the referee that night peeked up. He saw the Jumbotron. He goes over, and they have a huddle, and they wipe off the penalty. And, of course, the Predators go nuts. But they saw the Jumbotron, too. They know that that was the right call. But you can't do that. You're not supposed to do that. You don't peek at the Jumbotron. So does that go under the umbrella? So do you want to do this? Do you want to have the referees be able to go over and say, wait a minute, I'm not sure we saw this. Can we get a second look? Or do you want it to be, hey, you want to challenge it? You got to use your challenge. Which is the better way? To me, to avoid having too many senseless challenges like I think they have in baseball. I think because in baseball, I don't even know how many challenges you get because it doesn't matter. Like, you can kind of talk the umpire into going and taking a look at it, right? You notice games where that happens,
mm-hmm.
where they technically don't have a challenge, but they walk out there and go, dude, you got to go take a look at that. I think you're wrong. And then after the seventh inning, it's good. You know, there's a lot of – I don't even know what the rules are. So to me, it should be a challenge situation. And you just have more things than you currently do to have challenges. Then for specifically the hand pass, you got to make the parameters. Because if the – hand pass happened four passes before the goal scored. Should that really be something you can challenge? You got to define what that is. What's the window that you could look at that? Last night's would have been easy, right? We're going to prevent that.
Anybody could have
called
that.
But there's going to be a lot of other things that come up and say, wait a minute, you're really challenging that? That had nothing to do with why that goal was scored.
Yeah. Let's go to Nate down in the Borough. Nate, what's up?
Hey, guys. Being able to challenge a lot of penalties – or, you know, goalie interference, whatever, it would be a good thing. With the way Willie was talking about the high sticking, whether it was your own player or if it was someone else, how would they go about doing embellishment? Because, I mean, you can see where a guy gets hit in the face, and then it was probably just like a rough tap, and, you know, it probably does sting, but he doesn't have to throw his head back and fall face first on the ice. How would that be?
Well, okay, let's take it to – that's a great question, because in football now, you can challenge pass interference, and now you have to try to interpret all that. I think that would be a very hard thing to interpret in a hockey game. Did the guy embellish or did he not? So I don't think they can go there. I would try to keep it away from that. Because there are times where you're saying, wait a minute, you went down pretty easily there, Darren.
Well,
I didn't
hit
you very hard.
You're talking about through review? It would be hard?
Yeah, you're saying with
review,
right, Nate?
So you want them to figure out embellishment in live action, but it's too much for review?
I think when you review some of those,
it's
hard to tell.
So you think it's hard with a review, slowed down, but yet it's...
I think with a...
You're supposed to... You want them to make the call?
I think if a guy...
In live action.
I can see high stick or not. Did I hit the guy with a high stick, or did he fake getting hit? Or was it maybe my own teammate hitting me with the stick? That's one thing. But, like, I cross-check you, you go flying into the boards, or I trip you and you go flying... I think that's a hard thing.
I don't know how you could possibly make the case that it's harder to see something through review than through live action.
No, I'm not saying that. No. I'm just saying that sometimes you could look at it and not.
But you also could look at a review and be like, "Oh yeah, I guess."
but also, one thing I've seen is that, I mean, I haven't watched too many playoff games after the Preds got out, but I've seen them. I feel like enough to understand what's going on. What's with the non-cop-out rule, well, not rule, but quote-unquote rule, the penalty and embellishment? Why haven't we seen that more in the playoffs? Because I feel like there have been multiple times where we could have seen that.
I've seen it happen a few times. They have done it. Fair question. I don't have the evidence to back up what he's saying.
If there's anybody that could have been sent
times.
To the box, would be Lindell. For embellishment,
if that's
what he's asking for. Why haven't they called him more? Probably because that's just one of those that they're going to trim down in the playoffs. I mean, you have to know for sure. You know, the last thing you want is to start throwing that around in the playoffs. That rule, it's something. You know how I feel about it.
Sure. Bishop got hit with embellishment in the Predators series.
He did.
With good reason.
But you will not. The point is you will not see it as much in the playoffs maybe as in the regular season.
I guess they want to give guys the benefit of the doubt. It also depends on the team and whether they've been nabbed before for that. What's the reputation of some of those guys?
By the way, Nate Smith brought up to me on Twitter, thank you, Nate, Tiger Woods is indeed done for the day. 72, plus two. I didn't scroll down far enough. He's a plus two PGA Championship. We head to Lexington. We do that next. We'll talk to Tim Corbin on the other side, 102.5 The Game. We head to Lexington, Kentucky, where Vanderbilt will wrap up their regular season series against the Kentucky Wildcats. Tim Corbin, their fine coach, is on the line with us. Corbs, how you doing?
Good afternoon, Darren.
I wanted to ask you this because we forgot to do this last time, and before we get into your team and all that good stuff, you were on that list of the group. And by the way, the meeting was canceled in New York City, but we haven't been able to catch up with John Lohr. Have you had any – uh-oh, we lost him. We lost him. All right, we're going to have to reconnect. Did he hang up on me because he – I
don't think so.
John
it sounded
Lohr
the,
question?
The connection sounded a little shaky from the beginning.
Okay. I didn't know if he was avoiding that question. But we forgot to ask him last time.
Yeah.
And I am curious because the news is out that meeting in New York City is not going to take place this week. It's been canceled. The group from Nashville. So let's see if Tim Corbin is back on the line. Was Tim, are you there?
Sorry about that, Darren. Yeah.
That's fine. Just wanted to ask you if you've had any dealings with John Lohr and the group.
John was someone I met through Tony La Russa, and his son was a college baseball player. And we got to know one another through that. And then you know, understood John's background and so on, and he came to Nashville, and he's been creative guy, but always had thoughts of trying to think about Major League Baseball inside of Nashville, and we've sat down and spoken several times and asked if I would be interested in some type of advisory committee, and I know who is on that committee, but agreed to it, and, you know, since that point, since it was at the beginning of the season, we haven't done much, but we communicate quite a bit, and he comes to a lot of our games. I believe he's a season ticket holder now, so that's kind of where it started.
Is your vibe that this is a serious thing? I mean, how legit in your mind? I mean, obviously you've signed up to be a part of this, but it's a story that doesn't go away at all. In fact, it seems like it keeps getting legs. How serious is John Lohr in this group, in your opinion?
Well, yeah, I think he's very serious because he's had a background in baseball and certainly has a lot of friends in professional baseball. But the timing of it, I think, is the thing. I don't think this is something that, you know, happens right around the corner, although I don't know that. But I think it's something that's going to take some time. I think it's going to be real estate driven. I think there's a lot of factors that have to go into it. And I haven't been privy to a lot of other things, which I know are important to bring in a franchise name. Most important is Major League Baseball itself and them wanting to do it. So I think that's where it is right now.
I always ask you that at the beginning of a season, kind of how do you feel about things going into a season? So now I'm going to ask you as you're going to wrap up the regular season, how do you feel right now about your team? You feel like everything is in place? You're in a good place here to wrap up the regular season starting tonight in Lexington?
Yeah, I think we're in a good place, and I say that just from a consistency standpoint and how things, since you did ask me on day one and where we are right now, not much really has changed. I mean, we've had a few injuries along the way, which I would say most teams are exposed to, but we've learned how to get through those, and now, you know, we've shortened the roster, which we've had to because it's down to the end of the season. But I would say the balance of the players that have been here have stayed healthy, have created a nice harmony for the team, stayed quite consistent in everything that they've done, whether it be on or off the field, their handling of the days in between the games, and then the games themselves. That has been that's been enjoyable to watch. So, yeah, I think, you know, you never know where you're going to be, but I wouldn't want to be in any other spot right now than where we are. And I think the only other thing that matters now is just getting into that first game tonight and playing again with some type of consistency, positive consistency.
You said, Tim, about shortening the roster, and then after this three-game series, you know everything changes because then it becomes a tournament format the rest of the way. So what else after these three games in Lexington and your regular season is wrapped up, do you take a different approach because, like I said, everything then turns into a tournament format, or do you just stay business as usual? How do you approach it?
Probably the only way I've done it in the past, and that's try to stay as consistent as what we've done during the course of the season. I don't think, I do know that you just don't want to ramp up for anything. I think you spend a lot of time just trying to get your guys centered so that they can get out there and perform in a manner that's going to give them and the team consistency. And that's good enough. They don't have to do anything more than that. I don't want them to try harder. And a lot of times I want them to try easier. You know, I think at this point right now, we stay true to what we've done, how we prepare, how we go about a scouting report meeting. We try not to give too much information once they get to the field. We let them do what they want to do in terms of getting ready. But outside of that, we don't do anything different. I think our preparedness in between these days is where I think that's the coaching part that I want to own as much as possible. But once we get to this point right here, whether it's tonight, whether it's next week, whether it's 2, 3, 4 weeks from now, it's going to be business as usual.
Tim Corbin is with us, head coach, Vanderbilt Commodores. They play tonight and tomorrow at 5:30 Central against the Kentucky Wildcats, and then Saturday, the regular season finale at 1 o'clock up in Lexington. And, Coach, you know the hockey world is abuzz today about replay and, you know, what should be under the umbrella or not. And, of course, college baseball, and we've asked you about this before, they're in the beginning stages of having replay. I noticed the other night Harrison Ray hit a ball off of the old pool, which is now your facility, off the part of Memorial Gym, and it was very close, fair or foul, and it's a grand slam. It's a huge play in the game, and I noticed it was reviewed. And you don't have all the cameras that you do in an NFL game or things like that. How do you think the replay has worked so far in college baseball?
I love it, Willie, and the reason I like it is because it takes the friction out of the game. I just think it takes the element of an umpire and a coach and the anger that exists inside of a disagreement of a call completely out of the game. It is what it is. Once they see it on review, that's the call. You can't argue it after that, so you just go back and play the game. And I like that a great deal. I know it takes some time, and I know it's added minutes to the game, but I would trade that for the harmony that you have inside of the game. I don't think all replays are the same just because of what you mentioned, that's the views. We had four reviews the other night. You get to a tournament situation, you may have six or eight. So at that point right there, the camera angles are going to be better. And thus, if a call's made on the field and they don't really have the angle, then they're going to leave it on the field. I think that's the only tough thing. But you know what? It's got to start somewhere. And the fact that we're doing it, I'm sure it's going to be added, and it's going to be continually added as the years come.
How much progress do you think they've made from year one to year two?
In terms of the replay?
Yeah. Do you think they've come forward? I mean, because I know when it started, you got to figure out where are the cameras, how does the process work? I'm sure people are more comfortable now.
Way more comfortable, but from last year to this year, it's quite a bit different, because last year the umpires went to the review box and they reviewed it themselves. Now they just go to the review box, put on the headphones, and wait for the call to come in from Birmingham. So there's umpires in Birmingham. They're sitting there watching every game tonight, and every call that needs to be replayed, then they go to them, they sit down, they look at it, and then they come back with the call, and everyone lives with it. So I think from that standpoint, I like that. I like that a lot. It's cleaned up a lot, and I think we've got a very good game going on right now.
One thing that if somebody were to ask me where has your team made progress from the start of the year until now, the bullpen role definition, I watch it year in and year out. There's a process that you guys go through to try to figure out who should slot where. But the way that Hugh Fisher is throwing, boy, he was remarkable against Missouri last weekend. I saw a couple of guys have some nice performances the other night against Middle. You've got to really feel good about your bullpen options between your starter, and of course Tyler Brown has emerged and had a great year as the closer.
Yeah, I wrote that down as a note basically on what you said to myself a couple years ago and how long it takes to develop a consistent bullpen. And sometimes it takes a little bit longer, but I would say you get into the end of April, early part of May, that's when you start understanding who can do what. I think a lot of times when you get a bullpen, that you might have some younger guys and they come out of the gates all amped up, they throw, don't do a whole lot of pitching, and then there's some potholes that exist, and we had them. You know, I go back to the first Austin Peay game on a Wednesday, and we had a sizable lead and we lost it. But I think as time goes on, guys start to understand their role, they start to understand where they fit, they start pitching more than they start throwing. And then there starts to become some harmony that way, too. So I would agree with you. I certainly think that our pitching staff, at least after the starter, has really grown. The other part that has really taken off is we went 10-0 on Tuesdays. And I'm not going to say it's one person, but Mason Hickman has a lot to do with that. When you've got a guy that becomes your fourth starter and you can roll him out there every single Tuesday, you give your team a lot of consistency throughout the week, because that Tuesday bleeds into Thursday, bleeds into Friday. It just gives your team a nice feeling as you start to go forward. So I think that, along with the relief pitching, has really melded well for our team.
The last thing for you, we had a great conversation with Ethan Paul on Monday after the series is over. Of course, he graduates with a lot of his teammates, and it's a big weekend, and you guys take two out of three. But I noticed a real good even keel about him. You could tell, you know, he's got bigger goals in mind for this team, and all of the activity over the weekend wasn't too much. And one thing I noticed for him is he seems to me to be more natural as a shortstop than he was a second baseman. I asked him about that, and he said, well, so many guys on this team grew up playing shortstop before they get here, right? Because that's the most athletic position on the field. A lot of times people disperse from there.
That's right, and he was. I mean, he was an outstanding shortstop. It just so happened that when he and Connor Kizer got here, it was easier to slide Connor over to shortstop because Connor really didn't have any second base play. Ethan had a little bit. And I guess if you profiled him, you would say, okay, the bigger, taller guy could play shortstop. But as it worked out, he and Connor really were just such a good nucleus for us inside that infield for a long period of time, for 3 years prior to Ethan coming back. But to your point, Ethan's a better shortstop than he was second base. And I would tell you the reasons why is because he really, really moves his feet. When he's on that side of the diamond, he does an outstanding job of coming to the ball. When you're playing second base, you don't find yourself really going to the ball a whole lot. But shortstop, you have to. You have to play on the run. And he's more like a jump shooter who shoots on the run rather than does set. And I like that in him. And he's very consistent. You said it with his mind. He's an older person who, that's how he is in the classroom. And this guy's a Dean's List student for 4 years. I mean, he is on task every single day. And when you have those kids inside of your program, it just lends to the overall maturity and consistency of your team. And then typically what happens is you have better outcomes. So Ethan has a lot to do with that. He's a special, special kid, man.
Tim, I saw Maggie got a lot of run on local TV Sunday night, so she may be getting more autograph requests than you these days.
I think that's just perfectly fine. She'd be shaking her head right now. That just makes her squirm. But I'll tell you what, she does fine. You know, she gets on there and nothing changes. She doesn't try to posture or do anything. She just, that's Maggie. Whatever she says, whatever comes out of her mouth, that's it.
I think we're going to get her in here for an hour next week. How about that?
I would love that if you would do it. Seriously, she'd be fun. I'll tell you, you guys will laugh a lot.
Oh, well, that's what we want on this show for sure. Hey, best of luck wrapping things up in Lexington here starting tonight, and we will certainly talk to you soon. Thanks for doing this.
Thanks, gang. Always a pleasure. Thank you.
All right, that is Tim Corbin. Tonight, their game. First pitch is set for 5:30 Central Time, same time tomorrow night, and then Saturday they wrap up the finale at 1 o'clock Central Time. If he's being serious, we will get Maggie in here.
Oh,
if he's
boy.
Giving the okay.
I think we should do it.
I think we should. By the way, did you see his reaction? He started laughing immediately. That was funny. She did get a lot of run on local TV on Sunday night. We'll come back, wrap up Thursday's show next. Day one going on, 101st PGA Championship up in New York. Bethpage Black, to be exact. Brooks Koepka. Course record, 63 today atop the leaderboard. 7-under. Tommy Fleetwood is tied with Danny Lee at 3-under, though Danny Lee is just out on the course. He's just halfway through the course at 3-under. Tommy Fleetwood is done, 67, 3-under, so in second place. Lorenzo Vera. Luke List, Gary Woodland, all 2-under. And Woodland is still out on the course. He's not even halfway done. Ricky Fowler, 1-under, done. Matt Wallace, 1-under, done. So both of them shooting a 69. Jordan Spieth is out on the course. He's just through 5. He's 1-under. Let's see who else. Tiger Woods is done for the day, plus 2. Phil Mickelson is even right now, but he's just through 4 holes. Zach Johnson even through 3. And so those are some notable names.
Yep. Notables.
PGA Championship, day 2 tomorrow. By the way, the weather looked okay.
Yeah, not bad. It's been brutal up in the Northeast here recently. It has not been a great time. Meanwhile, tonight you've got Boston trying to close out Carolina. This could be the last of the storm surge unless Carolina can keep it going and get on the board. I thought that Boston would get one of the two in Carolina, but the bummer is once you're up 3-0, it's kind of like, oh boy. So how does Carolina come out tonight? Do they have some fight? Do they try to get it back to Boston? And then Portland Golden State, game two tonight. Portland did not put up much resistance in the first game at Oracle Arena. Can the script be different tonight? If they said, is Kevin Durant definitely out tonight?
Yep, out for game two.
Okay, I mean, why?
He's
why
not going to play this series, I don't think.
I doubt it.
They may not need it. If it was as easy as it was the other night. And I'll tell you this, the bench for the Warriors, which is pretty much non-existent in the last series against the Rockets, I think they kind of knew they needed to be looking to shoot a little bit more, contribute a little more. They did okay. So that was helpful as they sort of rallied.
Corey Davis told us he thinks he's paying attention. He still believes the Trailblazers and Warriors are going seven. I was like, wow.
He's optimistic.
That's a hot take. That is a hot take right there. So, I don't even think the series probably won't go six.
I just don't see it. I really don't.
You have to look at game three. I mean, I think we know what it's going to look like when the games are in Oracle Arena. It can look different when you go back home. It can. So we have to see what happens there.
Well, you said that about Houston, and indeed they did. They evened the series up.
I don't think it's as good a matchup for Portland as it was for Houston. Houston was made to beat the Warriors. They were built to beat the Warriors, and they didn't get it done.
It's a lot like what the Blazers is a lot like the Carolina Hurricanes. It's just you want to root for them, but it's not going to happen, and that's unfortunate.
Well, I like the way you've just declared them dead.
That's unfortunate.
They're down 0-1 in the series. Yeah, they're just like the Hurricanes, down 0-3. They're dead.
I mean, they might as well be. Okay. It's the Warriors.
I'll tell you who's kicking themselves, too, is the Raptors. They had a great opportunity to win game one on the road last night and coughed it up.
I wouldn't be surprised if the Bruins just don't go on and close it out tonight. Would you?
No, not at all. Not at this point. It's 3-0. Yeah. They got to be pretty heavily favored just to win this game. Obviously, they're heavily favored to win the series, but just go for the kill. Now, in hockey, we have seen there are more 3-0 comebacks in hockey than any other sport.
Look, you'd think we would learn by now to stop acting like we know. I mean, the minute you think somebody's dead or you've figured it out in hockey, good luck. Things can change in a hurry. Do I think it'll change? Probably not. But
no.
You're right. We've seen these comebacks happen. Don't forget, the San Jose Sharks were down 3-1 to Vegas in round one, and we declared them dead. Sharks are done. And I picked the Sharks to win. One of the few things I got right, the Sharks to beat Vegas. And I was like, yeah, they're done. That was a bad pick. And they won 4-3. So we'll see. Canes trying to stay alive tonight in Raleigh. That'll do it for our show today. Man, we had some fantastic guest today. If you didn't hear him, Ryan Leaf and Corey Davis.
I'll tell you what, if you want to hear a good interview, go on thegamenashville.com and listen to Ryan Leaf. Great stuff.
Great stuff indeed. That'll do it for us today. Have a great rest of your day. We'll be back at it tomorrow morning to close out the week at 10 a.m. We'll see you then.